Thank you so much. Wow, hasn't it been an awesome day? I have been blessed by every person that's been up here and just so thankful for the different gifts and the ministries and how it all kind of dovetails together. And I'm so grateful for being here, for being in Saskatoon. I actually have a sister that lives in this city, and I'm looking forward to seeing her sometime this week. And I haven't seen her for quite a few years, but she moved out to Regina many years ago and then ended up in Saskatoon. Well, every word this morning, how many have been just ministered by every single word? It's just been so good. And I want to tie it into something that I'm going to tell you a little bit of my testimony. Actually, I have to kind of just check the time here so I know how much time I have. You know, when we come into ministry, we come in, just like when we come into marriage, we come in with all of the things inside of us that we learned or experienced throughout our lifetime. And many of us have unresolved issues, unhealed hurts, fears, insecurities, and we bring those things in. And when I was growing up, my mother was married and divorced. Well, she was divorced four times, married five. And so my childhood had a lot of issues, and I grew up feeling a lot of shame, feeling insecure, feeling inferior. You know, I just had a lot of mindsets. I wasn't raised in a really born-again Christian home. It was in a Catholic home. And of course, because of her divorces, we were kind of the outcasts of the church. And so, you know, you feel like you're not good enough. And, you know, you grew up feeling a certain way. And then in my teenage years, I got really rebellious and got into the hippie movement and drug scene and all of that. And then I got saved when I was 18 years old. And that was over 50 years ago. Let you do the math. But why I'm trying to say that is when I got saved, I got really delivered from the fears and the insecurities and inferiority and all of those things that I had really, you know, held inside of myself and believed about myself, because we believe lies about ourselves. And I was doing great as a Christian. You know, as a new believer, I went to church. I got involved in everything. I did everything I could. You know, I was running youth group and working in children's church and running book tables and doing jail ministry, coffee house ministries. I just wanted to serve Jesus. I was so set free and delivered. And I never looked back. But then I got into leadership, into pastoring. And something happened. You know, the things that happen as a leader and as a pastor began to, like, people began to judge me that didn't judge me before. I started insecurities and fears that I wasn't going to be good enough or measure up or do it right, or, you know, just had fears that started to rise up. And of course, you can't meet everybody's needs. And you can't be perfect either. And you're going to make mistakes. And so, you know, through a series of time, my relationship with people in the church or even leaders in the church, there were breakdowns that happened. There were judgments that were made, things that happened that caused deep wounds in my heart and really caused a lot of my old fears and insecurities to resurface, things that God had delivered me from. And but because I knew God, I knew he was with me, I knew I was doing what I was supposed to do, and I knew he had put me there, I continued on. But something, as I loved what Megan shared this morning too about, you know, what happened inside of her heart, how we have to guard our hearts, because we begin to put walls up. We begin to be afraid of people and what they might think about us or say about us or the things they might do to us and the judgment calls they make on our lives. And so I began to kind of put walls around my heart. And I didn't realize in doing that, that I was actually, I wasn't separating myself from God, but it just, there was something wrong. It's like there's a wall there. You know you're not functioning the way you should be. And so I really related to what you shared, Megan. And so I went through a period of time where I just did things because I was supposed to do things. I chose to love people. I chose to forgive people. I did things I was supposed to do, but I didn't have a lot of feeling or passion with it. I was doing it more out of duty. And then in 2004, the movie, The Passion of the Christ came out. And I forgot to share this. When I was growing up too, I was the oldest of eventually five children. And we all take on roles as children. And my role, being the oldest, was I just had to hold it together for everybody else. I had to be strong for everybody else. And so I continued in that role as I got into ministry. And so, you know, I didn't allow myself to really process or feel. I just tried to do what I was supposed to do. And so when I saw the movie, The Passion of the Christ, I had an experience with the cross right after the movie. And I remember going home, my husband had actually flown out to Red Deer to minister there. And I, when I saw the movie, people were crying all around me. I was alone this particular time, and people were crying all around me, but I rarely cried. That was another thing. I just always withheld my feelings and my emotions because I was afraid to, you know, act them on. You know, if you act on how you feel, sometimes you might hurt people. And so I didn't. I just buried everything, pushed it down. And so after seeing the movie, I went home, and all of a sudden, as soon as I walked in the door, I just burst into tears. I started sobbing uncontrollably. But at the same time, I saw this very large cross. It was like a vision of a cross in my mind. And all these things that had happened to me, different events would come up one at a time and kind of swoosh through this cross in my mind. And each time that happened, I just had this overwhelming feeling of joy and love and peace that I can't even describe. It was just incredible. And when it kind of all stopped, I was left with two thoughts. One was, if I had to go through every horrible thing in my life again to have this experience, I would do it in a heartbeat. But the second thought was, and this was the big one, what do I really know about the cross? Because, you know, being a word of faith circles, camp, if you want to call it, you know, we all have our little camps we belong to. You know, we were kind of taught, you go to the cross for salvation, and Jesus isn't on the cross anymore, so you move on, and you know, you just benefit from the promises and the things that God has done for you. But somehow, some way, I knew there was more. And so I began researching the cross and looking up everything I could find about it and read about it and read as many books in print I could possibly find. And in that process, I discovered so much more about the cross that so much of the church doesn't really know to the degree or revelation that I was receiving, though I'm sure there's lots of people that do. But backtracking a little bit, I want to say this. I remember a time several years before this, quite a few years, maybe 15, before this happened, I was with a group of leaders, and we were sitting around talking about, you know, we're all faith people. We were talking about what we believed we were going to do and what God was going to do, and, you know, we were sharing our visions and all of this. And fast forward so many years later, I was the only one still serving God. Most of them were dead. And so, you know, I was married before too, before Pastor Rick, and married to a pastor who was killed in a car wreck, you know? So there was a lot of history there that had affected my heart. And yet I never questioned God, you know? I always knew God was who he is, and I trusted him. But at the same time, the things that have happened in my life and the things I'd gone through had really taken a toll on my emotions and my just emotional well-being, really. And so when I had this experience, I felt like, you know, I had gone through an inner healing, you know, just a supernatural inner healing God had done. And the joy and the passion and the love that I was supposed to be operating in had come back full force. And so in reading on the cross, I discovered so much amazing revelation. And I don't have time in 30 minutes to share hardly anything, but I will share some things that pertain to this. And I want to, first of all, go through a list of things that I believe hinder pastors and leaders from having healthy relationships and connecting with others. And then I'll kind of tie it into some of the things I've learned on the cross. Number one is betrayal. You know, betrayal is I can't tell you how many times I've been betrayed in ministry, you know, and I appreciated what Adam shared this morning about, you know, Jesus was betrayed, and that really ties into the cross, and I'll get to that in a minute. I'm just going to go through the things, and then I'm going to go back to the betrayal, just because I don't have time to get through them all. Fear, you know, there's fears we have, different fears, fears of not measuring up, fears of what people think, competition and comparison. You know, there's this need in us to measure up or to be successful or to accomplish certain things. And when we see other people that may seem more successful or accomplish more, it makes us feel insignificant or inferior. And those things really take a toll. Insecurities, which all of that plays into insecurities of not being good enough, you know, not measuring up. And then judgments of people, judgments, judging. You know, I think there's more judgment in the church than anywhere. You know, Christians are famous for judging one another and pointing the finger at one another. Accountability is another one, not wanting accountability because, and that ties into judgment, it ties into insecurity because sometimes we don't want accountability because we think if somebody really knows what I think or really knows what I'm going through or knows maybe I'm having a struggle with something, that they're going to reject me, right? They're not going to view me the same. And so there's that fear of accountability. Selfish ambition is a huge one, you know. Many people I know that have not connected or really gotten involved with ministry networks or other believers is because they're so selfishly ambitious of what they're doing. They don't care what anyone else is doing and they don't want to be involved. And then unity, not having unity. And there's many things that cause disunity, you know, differences of opinions on so many topics. The church is so divided on every topic you can think of. You know, from women in ministry to, you know, tongues to, you know, you name it, prosperity or not prosperity or, you know, now we're going through the whole COVID and the vaccine thing, but there's just, you know, eschatology issues. There's so many divisions of different beliefs or things of what we believe the word says. And these things hinder our relationships. They keep us from developing strong and healthy relationships with one another. And I want to get back to the first thing, which I think is betrayal, because it's probably one of the biggest. When I began studying the Word of God and studying the cross especially, I found out that every single detail of what Jesus went through was orchestrated purposely for what we go through. Because I'm going to tell you, as a leader, as a pastor, I've pastored for 40 years, maybe more. And I've been saved for 51. And so in pastoring and in leadership, you will be very, very hurt by a lot of people. It's a big part of it. And it doesn't matter how many good people you have in your church or in your ministry, you're going to be plagued by those that, you know, don't love you or don't embrace you or don't see you as their leader or betray you in some way. And so, how do we deal with that? How do we deal with the hurts? You know, I remember when I was going through all of this, God said to me, and I think it was Pastor Dave said this, we have to be able to love people even if they don't love us. You know, we have to get to that place, but how do we do that? How do you get to a place where you don't hurt, don't have that same pain that you have when you're, you know, going through something? And you will have pain. I'm not going to stand here and say you're not going to have pain, but there's ways we can process the pain. And that's what God taught me about the cross, is how to process the pain. Yes, I can move on and do the right thing. And that's what I did for years, but I was still festering inside. I was still had unhealed hurts. I still had feelings of things that had happened to me that I didn't know how to deal with. And I'm going to read John 13:1. It says, I love how God orchestrates his word, because he says, before the Passover celebration, Jesus knew his hour had come to leave this world and return to his Father. So here it is. It's, you know, in John 13:1, it's talking about the first verse is that Jesus knew he's about to go through his passion. He knew he's about to die, you know, and he knew everything that was going to happen to him. But the very next sentence, it says, he had loved his disciples during his ministry on earth, and now he loved them to the very end. So here he's with his disciples, and it's making a point of telling us how much he loved those disciples, how much he cared about every one of them. You know, they had been the men that God had given him, that had walked with him and done ministry with him, and they'd seen all the miracles, all the things that he had done. But then in the very next sentence, it says, it was time for supper, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. So now Judas was one of those disciples that Jesus loved to the very end. And real betrayal hurts the most when it's by somebody that you love. And when you get betrayed, you feel like a knife has been thrust into your heart. You know, you feel like it affects your identity. It affects, you know, so many areas of your life. And it causes you to believe lies and feel insignificant. It causes great pain. I remember years ago, a friend of mine had a nervous breakdown because of a broken relationship. And she ended up in a psychiatric hospital. And I went to visit her. And I went to visit her regularly for a while. And I got to know some of the other patients. And almost every one of them was in a psychiatric hospital with nervous breakdowns because of betrayal. Because it devastated them that much. I remember years ago, after all my research on the cross, I wrote a book on the cross. And I don't have it here because I sold them all in Calgary. But anyway, I had that book. It went all over. And I remember getting a phone call one day from a pastor that I did not know, never met him. And he was from California. And he called me and he said, "I'm just calling you to thank you. You saved my life." I'm thinking, how did I save his life? I don't even know him. He said, "I had the worst betrayal." He didn't tell me what it was, but he just said, "I went through the worst betrayal in my church. I didn't want to live anymore. I was done. I had written a suicide note. I was at my desk and I had a gun on my desk and I was going to take my life. And I saw your book on the cross and I picked it up and I opened it to the chapter on betrayal. And God delivered me and he healed me." And I'm saying that because Jesus went through betrayal because we go through betrayal. He went through it because betrayal is a sin of what man does to one another. Betrayal destroys relationships. It ruins friendships. It ruins marriages. It ruins, you know, every kind of relationship when betrayal happens. And yet betrayal is something that's probably happened to everybody in this room at some point. And maybe you've even been ones that have betrayed somebody at some point where somebody trusted you. And it robs and strips us of our identity. And so I'm saying that because that fear of betrayal often is what causes people to isolate and to not want to have close relationships because they've experienced the pain and the fear and the hurt. And there's a natural thing in us that wants to self-preserve, you know? Who purposely wants to be hurt? Nobody. And yet we have to put ourselves out there. And we have to face our fears. Jesus faced his fear. He faced it. He knew Judas was going to betray him. He knew the plan. That didn't stop him from loving Judas. But he knew. And so you have to ask yourself, well, how do you do this? Like, how do you get through the things? You know, there's things of false accusation. Jesus had, I won't go through all the scriptures because of time, but it says that Jesus, the Pharisees and the Sadducees were trying to find people to bring false witness against him so they can put him to death. And they were falsely accusing him. And so, you know, how many have ever had somebody falsely accuse you or lie about you or slander you, you know, for some reason? And so we go through that. And it's similar to betrayal because it really, you know, undermines who we are. It undermines, you know, our character and, you know, it could undermine our calling and what we're supposed to do. And so Jesus, you know, he was falsely accused. And then he went through the greatest injustice that you could ever imagine. You know, can you imagine this playing out in a court today where you get judged and you're judged innocent, but you're given the death sentence anyway? And that's what happened to him. But injustice, you know, there's so many things that just aren't fair. You know, have you ever been in a situation that happened and you said, "This isn't fair, this isn't right, you know, this is unjust." And we see it all around us, but it happens in the church. And again, those things play into, you know, the pain that we as pastors or leaders can carry inside of us that hurt us. But we still have to love people. We still have to put ourselves out there. So how do we do it? I read in a scripture, Hebrews 12. I want to go there for a second. I'm going to have to look this up in my... I'm trying to do five messages in one here. And it's a little difficult, but trying to get it all tied in. Hebrews 12, verse 1. And I'm going to read to verse 3. And it says here that, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with endurance the race God has set before us. And then it tells us, so we know, you know, sin sets us up. And I want to, this is something I usually teach on when I teach on the cross, but I want to just go to this really quick. I'll just tell you in Numbers 21, when the Israelites were in the desert and they were murmuring and complaining against God and Moses, and the snakes came and were biting them and they were all dying. And then they told Moses to, or God told Moses to put a snake on a pole and hold it up. And if they looked at the snake, they would live and not die. And because thousands of them were dying from the snake bites, and the snake bites represent sin when sin happens. And the things that hurt us in the church as leaders is sin, whether it's other people's sin or our sin. Sin comes two ways. It comes when we sin ourselves. And when we sin ourselves, we can get under condemnation and guilt and feel like a failure. And, you know, the fears and insecurities we have about ourselves can rise up. And or if other people sin, like the betrayals and the false accusations and all of those things, those are like snake bites and they hurt us. And it's like when you get that snake bite, the poison of that gets into you. You get the poison of, you know, what other people do to you, or you get the poison of condemnation of what you do yourself wrong, the mistakes you make that want to make you feel disqualified and not good enough, and, you know, all of those things. And so when the snake bites happen, you know, what do we do with it? Well, it's very clear in that story, because Jesus said in John 3:14, he referred to that and he said, the Son of Man must be lifted up. And so Jesus, when he was on the cross, all sin was put on him. We know that. But what did they have to do to get healed of the snake bites? They had to look at the pole with the snake on it. They had to look at it. And if we continue reading on here in Hebrews chapter 2, it says, we do this. In other words, we run with endurance the race and get rid of the sin that trips us up. We do this by keeping. Keeping means staying there, right? If you're keeping something, you're staying there, or you're staying with it. By keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. And then it tells us the key of how he did it. It says, because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding the shame. Now he is seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. So they're saying Jesus, when he was going through his suffering, his crucifixion, his passion, he wasn't focusing on the shame of the cross. He wasn't even focusing on what he was going through. He was focusing on the other side of the cross. He was focusing on the joy set before him. He was focusing on you and I coming into the kingdom and worshiping before the throne of God. He was focusing on you and I when we go through our hurts, our pains, our sorrows, our difficulties, our struggles, that we don't have to be destroyed or poisoned by those things, but that we can overcome those things and we can walk in victory and not allow those snake bites to hurt us. We can shake them off. We can find healing when we keep our eyes on him. See, he went through all of those things because he knew we were going to go through those things. And he knew we needed help. Because for me, I had stuff. I didn't know what to do with the stuff that happened to me. I mean, my flesh wanted to kill a few people, but I couldn't do that. Or maybe I wanted to say some things I shouldn't say, you know, and I couldn't do those things because I'm a pastor. I got to be careful what I do and say, and, you know, and sometimes I did make mistakes and did and said some stuff I shouldn't have. But the point is, you can't just stuff it. You got to process it. And I have learned that processing it through the cross by thinking about Jesus and connecting with him in the things he went through, whatever he went through. You know, if I'm going through betrayal, I think of his betrayal and I try and talk to him and connect with him. And so help me rise above this. Help me see the other side of this. Help me see what's, you know, where I'm going and what I'm supposed to do. And then it says, think, verse 3. How many know how to think? What does it mean to think? It means to dwell on, you know, have foremost in your thoughts. Think of, it's telling us what we're supposed to think of, all, not some, all of the hostility that he endured from sinful people. Then you won't become weary and give up. Then you will not become weary and give up. After all, you've not yet given your lives in your struggle against sin. So in other words, Jesus, he went through every possible thing. He was beaten. He was ridiculed. He was shamed. He was humiliated. He was, you know, made fun of, mocked. He was lied about. He was misjudged. He was, you know, betrayed. He was abandoned. He went through every single thing we could ever go through and more. But we're supposed to think about what he went through. And when we're going through anything similar, we're supposed to think of him and his pain, his suffering, and know he went there for us so that we could be set free, so that we could be healed, so that this would not be the end of us. And that's what he wants for us. See, we can't do it without him. We could do it wounded. We could do it hurt. We could do it, you know. We can get by, some of us, but we will never be everything we could be or do everything we can do unless we connect with him in our pain and get healing from him in our pain. And that's the biggest thing that I learned from understanding the cross. You know, even from being everything Jesus did, from being nailed to the cross and the things he said from the cross, everything is so significant and so powerful and so meaningful for us that applies to us. We can't just not think about it. We got to dwell on it. I need the cross every day. Not only that, in guarding my heart, you know, I had in there a comparison. So often we compare how good we're doing by how good other people are doing. You know, we compare our success by how successful somebody is, you know, compared to what we think we should be. And all of that is of the enemy. The only thing God cares about is our hearts and the condition of our hearts and what's going on in our hearts. It doesn't matter how big our church is or how many people we have or how much money we have or where we go or don't go. What matters is what's going on inside here. And the healing power of the cross is what we need. It's what we need. And as we learn, like one thing I like to do is, and I got to stop. I know I've got 5 more minutes. I like to do is when Jesus was on the cross, his whole suffering, passion, and resurrection, it's all one event. So when I talk about the cross, I'm talking about all of it, the blood. But when he was on the cross, he was revealing to humans, his creation, his heart. He was revealing to us the character of God. The Bible tells us Jesus revealed the exact character and nature of God. And the one thing that we have to have as a foundation in our beliefs is the character of God. If we don't trust God and we can't trust God, then we have nothing to stand on. Because we're going to go through storms, we're going to go through trials, we're going to go through things where we have to trust God for the outcome. And so when Jesus was on the cross, he was revealing the character of God, the heart of God. And he had a perfect heart. He had total humility, love, unselfishness, obedience, you know, every attribute, you know, every positive attribute of God was revealed on the cross as who he is. And he's the light of the world. And so when the light of his heart shines into my heart and I let it, because I think about his heart, I think about the attributes he possessed to go to the cross and die for us. And when I allow that to shine into my heart, it reveals to me the things that are still there. I can't go to see his heart and not see what's going on in my heart. And I'm always going to see a little bit of selfishness or pride or fear, or, you know, things that get in there. But the beauty of the cross is it never condemns us. He makes a declaration over us. You are my righteousness. You know, I'm the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus. But it also gives me such an overwhelming sense of the love and the mercy and the grace of God that how can I condemn another person? It gives me the ability to love people that I don't have myself. Because every time I look at his heart and see my heart, I'm very overwhelmed. very overwhelmed. We can read it in Ephesians when Paul said when he thinks about it, he just falls on his knees when he thinks about the love of God, the depth of that love. And the best place to experience that love is seeing the cross. And it changes you. And it gives you the ability to love those people that you normally can't love on your own strength. That doesn't mean we have to have dangerous people or harmful people, you know, in our lives, but we can still love them. And so connecting and having relationships with other people, we are all called to do that. I love Pastor Jim's message this morning. That was one of the best messages I've heard on that. So good. About the connect, we need connections. We need relationships. All relationships are risky. There's risk in every relationship. But we need them. We need them. Because we can't do it alone. And the benefits are amazing. You may have a betrayer in there, probably will. But you're going to have a lot of people that are going to stand with you through thick and thin. And so we have to be open. Amen. And so I'm going to end there.